Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome. This is Bill Koch here with Eric Rube in the Providence Journal podcast studios with a special high school football Super Bowl edition of this podcast. It is unnamed, it is untitled, it will be free form, but it will go over the four games that will be played this weekend at Cranston Stadium, the Divisions 1, 2, 3, and 4 Interscholastic League football Super Bowls. We haven't done anything like this before, Eric, but we were talking about this, you know, probably last weekend after the semifinals and thought it would be a good idea to get together and give a little hype to these games.
It's, I mean, I talk about high school football a lot, sometimes to people who don't want to listen, and it's I think there are a lot of people out there who do want to listen and hear about what's going on. It's going to be a big weekend for football. It's going to be a lot of fun, which is the more important thing, especially with some of these matchups we got going.
It's always great to see kids play for championships, and especially in a football season, considering it's so long and so difficult. You start in the 90-degree heat. You finish in the cold and the rain like it is today. You sacrifice so much of your time and your body and your effort. You know, so to see those guys compete on the field this weekend, you know, will be fun to watch. And, you know, like you said, we've got four very interesting games here.
Yeah, it's you know, you can make your predictions at the beginning of the season of who's going to be there, how are the playoffs going to play out, and inevitably something happens that you didn't see coming. And I think this weekend is no different with all four of the matchups. I mean, there are teams in there that, you know, like a North Kingstown, that maybe they were going to be in the state championship and not in this Division One. I mean, Pilgrim kind of did what we expect, but Tolman kind of came out of nowhere in Division Three and really stepped up their game this year. Division Two, first 2 weeks into the season, anyone would have laughed at you thinking Mount Pleasant won Socket. And Division Four, to get a Super Bowl rematch of a game that was so good last year, it's really cool. It's going to be really fun to see.
All right, so we're going to start in Division One. You know, and as you mentioned before we came on, this game is sort of the Interscholastic League's dream matchup. You've got the two huge public schools, North Kingstown and Cranston West. They will kick off on Saturday at noon at Cranston Stadium, Cranston West de facto home field. A rematch of last year's game, won by North Kingstown 20-14. And you're looking at, you know, two teams who have a combined two losses. You know, North Kingstown's was to Hendricken very early in the year. Cranston West was to Portsmouth very early in the year. Those two teams ended up playing in the state championship Super Bowl. You know, so you look at these two teams and you're looking at two programs, really. This goes beyond just the 2019 season. These are two teams very well coached by Joe Gilmartin and Tommy Maluski, very committed to being good and winning at football. And I think that's why you're going to see these two teams matching up here on Saturday.
Yeah, it's like you say, these are legacy programs. I mean, North Kingstown worked really hard to get back to where it is now, from coming up from Division II and establishing itself as the state's premier public school program. Cranston West, I mean, this is 4 years in the making for them. They've been excited for this team since these kids stepped on the field and played in the freshman Super Bowl. The season, you know, Cranston West, I think, didn't like the way the season would have played out. But when they took that loss, they made the most of it, and they knew this was our goal. This is what we do now, and they kind of accepted it for what it is. And like you said, the league couldn't have asked. It's going to be insanity. You get to the game early, you try to find your seat, because this is going to be probably the most people you're going to see at a football game this in years.
Yeah, it's going to be wild. I know you're going to be there covering that one. And, you know, just breaking down the matchup a little bit, you know, you look at West, 33-20 winner in the semifinals against Central. I was at that one, and Kim Alves is one special football player. You know, senior captain at Cranston West, had 225 rushing yards in the game, ran for four touchdowns. You know, is just such a tough kid, such a great leader. You get the sense of why these teams are in these games when you talk to some of these kids afterwards. And they're the type of kids who you would want to follow, and he's definitely one of those.
Cam's a football lifer. I was covering the Exeter West Greenwich teams, coached by his dad and his uncle. And he was the ball boy, sitting on the sidelines, running up, not paying attention every now and then. But he's the kind of kid that every single coach in the state wants. Not because of his size or speed or his skill, but because he goes out there with one purpose, and that's to win football games. He wants to go out, and he gets the most out of his ability. And if there's you don't like to use the cliches of, oh, he's got the heart that's going to drive him to win, but
right.
This is the one time where you make that exception, because he's going to do everything he can to make sure Cranston West wins on Saturday.
Yeah, he's got some nice complimentary pieces. Brandon Stetson's a good change of pace back. Nick Denisio is a very capable two-way player as a co-captain. Matt Cavallo made a couple big plays against Central in that game. The clinching interception with about 2 minutes to go in a 33-20 game. So that's the type of team with a lot of seniors who play physical up front, who has a clear leader and a clear idea of what they want to do. That's the type of team that tends to win year over year. North Kingstown falls into the same category, and obviously you were at their semifinal game against LaSalle, 35-0 shutout. You would normally look, and you would just look at that score without knowing anything about both teams, and you would be surprised. But the way that those two teams have played this year, particularly the way that North Kingstown has played last year and this year, that result wasn't surprising at all.
With North Kingstown's skill set, I mean, Osmanski is, if he's not the best quarterback in the state, he's number two.
James Osmanski, their quarterback, yep.
Their wide receiving core, they have a bunch of, I mean, for better or worse, like, you know, Julian Edelman-type wide receivers. They're going to fast, quick cuts. They all run the same routes, but they run them quickly, and the state really hasn't developed the type of secondary needed to stop an offense like this. And it's, right. You know, Joe Gilmartin doesn't hide what they're trying to do. They're going to pass. I think last week they had maybe one running attempt, I think, in the first half of the game, other than Osmanski kind of scrambling out or getting his own number called there. But there's not going to be a lot of handoffs from North Kingstown.
You know, North Kingstown has scored, I'm looking at their schedule throughout the season right now, their lowest total was 30. 30-7 win at Cumberland, and that was back on October 11th. This offense, they run out there like a slot machine pretty much. And you know, you mentioned James Osmanski. Last year, he played in the Super Bowl with a hand injury. That really hampered him throughout the second half of the season. They had to really grind it out. It was 20-14 over West, and you know, a game that maybe didn't play the way that Joe Gilmartin would have liked it. I think you're going to see a lot more of his typical spread, utilizing his athletes, doing the kind of things that Central was able to do successfully against Cranston West with Malik Montero and their guys on the perimeter. We'll go to prediction at this point. I think that's why, just looking at those matchups, I would have to favor North Kingstown in this game. I think that they're going to be able to score enough points, and I think that their defense will be just good enough. They'll be able to scheme it just enough, put eight or nine guys in the box, stop Cam Owls from getting loose between the tackles, and I think that they'll have just enough to get by West in this one.
If Cranston West wants to win that game, my thinking is that they're going to try to own the ball. They're going to try to go on long, long drives, run the ball. 4 yards every time, that works for them. The longer they hold on to the ball, that's less time North Kingstown's going to have to score. And their defense, Cranston West's defense has been one of the best defenses in the state. They have the size, strength, and speed up front. They're going to get after Osmanski. They're going to make his life difficult. Their secondary has been very good. However, I don't know if their secondary has really played an offense or a wide receiver group like this, and that's really going to be the matchup to watch. If West's secondary can somehow control this wide receiver group, West has a really good shot of winning this game. Now, would I predict that? It's having seen Osmanski in this offense run twice, I can't pick against them right now. And right. It's just because they run, you'll see wide receivers, Osmanski releases the ball, the wide receiver hasn't hit his break yet, and it looks like the ball's going out of bounds. All of a sudden, there's the cut, and the ball's there.
Right.
And it's something to watch. And if you're not a North Kingstown fan, or you don't have anyone on the team, you're not from Cranston, you just like football, it's the kind of game where you go as a casual viewer just to watch it, because it's going to be a really exciting game.
The second game on Saturday will be the Division III Championship, a game that's near and dear to my heart. Eric, I won't try to hide this. Pilgrim, my alma mater, playing against Tolman.
You can be a homer. It's all right. It's okay. We all got it inside of us.
I'm not going to be a homer. I'm also not going to be covering the game, so that's probably a good thing. this is a rematch, actually, of the 1975 Super Bowl, the only state championship that Pilgrim has won in football, 20-7 that year over the Tigers. They had a great quarterback named Chris Ogletree, who ended up going on to URI and, you know, actually coached freshman basketball when I was a freshman at Pilgrim. You know, so I'll date myself there and say shout out to Coach O. But Pilgrim this year, 7-0, back in the Super Bowl. Last year they lost 14-10 to Central Falls, a really good Central Falls team. Dutchie Arroyo is one of the best athletes that we've seen in a long time. Pilgrim was still in that game. The core of that team is back. I think their coach, Blake Simpson, told me earlier this year he has 20 seniors. Mike Borges, a big, physical, strong running quarterback.
He's a fire hydrant.
Yeah.
He just runs hard, runs straight.
Dimitri Ayers, you know, sort of smaller, shiftier running back. And Connor Fallon's the type of athlete who, you know, anybody would want, either a tight end or defensive end, a really tough matchup. You know, the Patriots this year have made fairly easy work out of just about everyone. One of the games that they did have to push them was against Tolman earlier this season.
And I was at that game.
16-14 game in Pawtucket, so we should be in line for a good one there.
It was the one thing that can't get lost in this, you know, this game. These are two great teams. Pilgrim didn't have a football team for about a 3-week span in July or June, late June to early July.
Right.
And for these kids, you know, when all that news was coming out that Pilgrim, that Warwick's was going to disband these athletic programs and after school stuff, the kids kept working because they had faith that something was going to get worked out. And
right.
That whole situation, you know, it stunk out loud, but the kids didn't stop working because they knew they wanted to be out there playing and they wanted to be prepared if things worked out. So for those kids to go through all that and to still be in this position, continue to work hard and continue to do this, it says a lot about this group of kids.
Yeah, it's huge credit to their seniors. It's huge credit to Blake Simpson, their coach, who's an alum. He was a tight end as well at Pilgrim and a defensive end. You know, the type of guy who takes a great deal of pride in what he's doing. And in the last two seasons, he's done a great job there. You know, they were winners in the semifinal 30-12 over Narragansett, a game where, you know, really it played out just like the regular season game against Narragansett. They were just too big and too physical up front. You know, Borges was too hard to tackle as a running quarterback, and they just really, you know, punished Narragansett up front. I'm not certain they're going to be able to do the same things to Tolman. I also think that Tolman has some weapons on the outside that other teams don't.
Tolman is the ideal worst matchup for Pilgrim.
Right.
Tolman's got size up front. They've got strength up front. And in the backfield, they've got speed. If you don't know the name Cute Today, you probably don't know it because you think it's fake. But Cute Today is one of the better running backs, better linebackers in the state. He's fantastic. He's a hard runner. He missed the first few games of Tolman's season with an injury.
Mm-hmm.
His first game back was against Pilgrim. And it was a huge difference. As soon as he got out, I think his first run of the day went for like a 70-yard touchdown.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of player this kid is. And they're just going to keep feeding him. They're going to feed him the ball and make him work. The Pilgrim-Tolman matchup came down to a defensive play at the end of the game. Tolman was driving with the ball. Pilgrim forced the fumble, got on top of the ball, sealed up the game that way. And to be honest, I think this game is going to be played out very similar. It's not going to be that pretty football, that fun, high-flying football we're going to see in D1, but it's going to be that ugly, old-school, let's just punch each other in the face and see who's standing up at the end.
Tolman 24-0 over Charaho in their semifinal. A couple other guys to watch there. Jordan Cooper, dual-threat quarterback, a really good athlete. Daniel Akinshay on the outside is probably his best target as a receiver. You know, those are guys who can really do some damage in a hurry. You know, if they're able to get in the open field, definite matchup problems for Pilgrim on the outside.
And Cooper's got a great head on his shoulders. One of the things that impressed me was after that game, there was, I don't want to call them extracurriculars, but, you know, kids starting to get a little mouthy.
Sure, sure.
Cooper was the first person to grab his teammates, shove him off to the side and say, let's not do anything stupid now. He knew what happened at the end of that game, and there was no need to do anything else. And for a kid like that to step up and do that, that tells you a lot about what kind of player and what kind of kid this Cooper is.
Well, like I said off the top of the podcast, there's a reason that these teams are here, and it's due to leadership like that. When your best players have that good head on their shoulders, it's not a coincidence that these teams are in these games. You know, we go to Sunday. The Division II Super Bowl kicks off at noon.
You're just going to skip over predicting Division III?
Oh, you want to predict?
I mean,
well,
I already
said I'm in the tank for Pilgrim. I think they'll have to win a close game, though, because in the Super Bowl, these styles of games, these styles of defenses, these coaches being so good, it's very hard to do what Pilgrim does traditionally, go on a 12, 13, 14 play drive. They tend to stop people. The home run hitters tend to win these type of games. Pilgrim got victimized by that last year by Central Falls, who made a couple big plays, scored on both of them, won the game 14-10. It's really, really hard to go up and down the field against one of these defenses, but I think Pilgrim's experience in the game last year, the fact that they are so veteran, I think that probably wins out in another really close game.
I am going to do, this is next level stuff here, on this podcast, I'm going to tell you right now that Tolman's going to slow this game down, get it played the way they want, and they're going to execute, hold on to the ball, and win this game. Now, when I write my football column, I'm going to pick Pilgrim. So either way, I can't be wrong here. So,
well, the Patriots will appreciate that. I'm sure the Tigers will hate you. You know, but such is life.
It's a win-win for me.
It certainly is. So now we will go to Sunday. You're right. I was a little afraid of making a prediction there. We will go to Sunday at noon back at Cranston Stadium. And this is really, if you're looking at the four games, this is the underdogs game.
This is my favorite game of the weekend. I booked myself into going to Patriots Cowboys with my wife. Very excited. Thought this was coming after Thanksgiving. I made a mistake.
Tough consolation prize, Eric.
I made a mistake. I wish I could be watching this game. I will watch the Patriots play the Cowboys instead. But this is going to be the most fun game of the weekend.
Well, I've met your wife, Stacey. I went to your wedding. I would say one of the outstanding things about your wife is do not deny her football. Do not do that, because happy wife, happy life means you will take her to Gillette Stadium. Fun fact for folks out there, the place where Eric Rube got engaged to his lovely wife, Stacey.
Patriots versus Steelers.
There you go.
Patriots lost.
Tough.
I won, though, so that was okay.
Good answer. Very good. So I will be at Cranston Stadium on Sunday for this one. The underdogs version, the Division II Super Bowl, Mount Pleasant against Woonsocket, a pair of three lost teams who have made their way through the Division II field. You know, and actually, Eric, you were at the forefront of this one. You were one of the earlier people calling for this matchup. You actually got a text message from an unnamed coach.
An anonymous coach who said, before the playoffs started, it's going to be Woonsocket versus Mount Pleasant. And I heartily laughed and said, how is that going to happen? And then he went through, and sure enough, he was right.
And fascinating the way they ended up there. We'll start with really the two, you know, I would say probably the two best semifinal games that we had last weekend. With all due respect to North Smithfield, Mount St. Charles, and Pontagansett, we'll get to them next. But Mount Pleasant going three overtimes with Barreville, winning 46-40 up at Alumni Field, a place that not a lot of teams go into and win. Woonsocket outlasting East Greenwich 7-6 on a controversial, disputed 2-point conversion call at the end of the game. East Greenwich felt that Jack McMullen got in. Replays are inconclusive. I watched Ian Steele's footage from ABC6 probably a dozen times, and I still can't tell you if his knee was down before the ball got over the goal line. Bottom line is, we end up with the Kilties against the Villanovans. Extremely unlikely. And I would imagine that both teams look at this as a little bonus and can't wait to try and get out there and win themselves a title.
It's for Woonsocket, you know, they've been there. This is their chance. They're going to get a chance to repeat as D2 champions. Mm-hmm. Mount Pleasant's never been in this game before. Mm. Division II level. Like, I was looking it up. They've played Division III Super Bowls, Division IV Super Bowls, but never a D2. And when you're looking for elite talent, the elite talent's on the Mount Pleasant side with Fred McMillay and Javon Blackburn. And I know not a lot of people want to go watch offensive linemen. Javon Blackburn is just about as good as Xavier Truss was last year for Hendrickson. Mm. And when you watch a kid like that work on the line, it's, for a football nerd like me, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, you can't deny the talent that's come out of Mount Pleasant's program in recent years. Those Lay brothers, you know, obviously Joseph Putu, who ended up playing college football at Florida. You know, it's just a place. It's a matter of exposure. It's a matter of those kids getting seen somewhere. You know, you watch the ability that they have on the field. It's undeniable. You mentioned recent championships for Mount Pleasant. Three straight in Division IV from 2010 to 2012, and then another in Division III from 2013. You'd have to go all the way back into the 1960s to find the last time that Mount Pleasant won a title in Division I or Division II. Obviously, they were a power then in Class A. You see the neighborhood around that school, and you can imagine what it used to look like with kids in all of those homes and, you know, families going to that school and, you know, just the amount of talent that was coming in and out of there. You know, but they've done a great job to get back here. Obviously, to outlast Barreville the way they did, you're talking about Malley running the ball, had one of the most outstanding individual performances I've ever heard of in the quarterfinals against Lincoln. 427 yards.
And then their coach texted me last week, 212 last week. So that's a four-week total of 1,200 yards. That's a fantastic season for people.
Which is, it's just absurd to think about that he's run for 1,200 yards. The 427 against Lincoln, I put out a couple feelers to try and see if anybody else had ever had more. You know, I can remember a 300-yard game by a single-wing quarterback in North Kingstown named Dave DiRico, who was also a great baseball player. He put up, I think it was 303 against Hendricken in a win once.
And I, covering those Exit West Greenwich teams that I mentioned before, I covered Al Giorgio during the year he went for, it was 2,872 yards for the season.
Right.
He had a couple 300, but I think his highest was 328, which is, you get to that number, it's astronomical. You don't expect to see more. Saw some people on Twitter saying, oh, some kid from Westerly had in the 340s, 350s,
okay,
which is still a big number, but 400 is, it's really hard to do. And
right,
I saw some of the highlights from Malay. And there was just big run after big run. You can't. He's one of the top six sprinters in the state. If he gets outside or hits a hole, he's gone. And when you got a kid like Blackburn blocking, he opens that hole. Those holes are there for him. It's when Winsocket's got some size and some speed up front. They've got the strength to kind of, you know, kind of hold Blackburn down. But they've got to find a way to get Malay to the ground as soon as possible, because if he gets loose anywhere, punt return, catching the ball out of the backfield, running, it's a touchdown.
Yeah, they obviously they face some good athletes already. You know, in Winsocket's case, East Greenwich was a little banged up, but the week before, they did a pretty good job of bottling up Rocco Salino, who's, you know, Westerly's single wing quarterback. He got loose once on a 79-yard touchdown run, but otherwise, Winsocket did a very good job in that game, in particular in the fourth quarter. You're looking at a quarterback in Tarek Robinson O'Hagan, who, like Mike Borges for Pilgrim, is an absolute load when he gets out of the pocket.
If we're calling Borges a tank, I don't know what we're going to call Tarek, because he's...
Well, you call Borges a fire hydrant, he's a,
whatever.
So you can call Tarek a tank
he's
if you want.
He's a fire truck, then. The kid's enormous. He runs hard, he runs straight, and he'll run right through you. He had the 42-yarder against East Greenwich,
right,
that got him on the board, and kid's only a sophomore. He's athletic. At his size and speed, it's not easy, and it's... Mount Pleasant's one of their weaknesses in the games that I've seen them play is their line play needs to be more aggressive. Blackburn can plug a lot of holes at his size and his strength, but he needs help. They're going to need to really, really seal up the interior. Outside runs, they've got some speed there, Winsocket, with Logan Coles, but if they can, whoever wins the middle of this game in the mud is going to end up on top at the end of the day.
The guy who really impressed me against Westerly was Eric Aguemang, the basketball player. If you've ever seen Winsocket play basketball, particularly last year in the state tournament, you would have seen him on the glass at both ends and how athletic and physical he can be. He's a great target for Robinson O'Hagan on the outside. You wonder if, you know, Winsocket will try to loosen them up a little bit, maybe try to throw a couple jump balls out there.
I think the issue they will have with passing is that Malay, in addition to being one of the best runners in the state, he's the state's top defensive back, and there's not a lot of kids he can't cover.
The difference there is Aguemang's probably got him by five or six inches. So if you can get him singled in that spot, maybe you still want to take a shot at it. Winsocket also has the pedigree, obviously, of being the defending champions. You know, they were in this game last year. Last year was just such an amazing story for them, you know, considering what went on off the field, and obviously you reported on that extensively, the tragedy that they played through and the way that they were able to finish it off.
Yeah, and it's this year's a different team, and it took a little while for them to find their identity, get their head straight, and get going. And I'm curious to see how they come out. I think they're going to come out with a little bit more fire. Mount Pleasant's going to have to get used to the environment because they've never played in a game like this before. So, I mean, if I'm making a prediction, my heart wants to go with the talent because I really think Belay can have one of those 250-yard games, the type of things we talk about for years. But I think after Woonsocket got their first win, I tweeted out, don't let them get hot because you're not going to stop them. And at this point, they're hot. So I can't not pick them right now.
Yeah, I think I would also go with the Villanovans. This program is more than one special running back. It's more than just Emmanuel Gomes last year and what he did. Charlie Bebo has done a great job of getting his kids to turn out, to play for him, to play hard, and to finish the season as well as they have. So I would also be on the Villanovans in that game. I expect that one to be really tight and go down to the end. The last game, Sunday at 4 o'clock, will be Tiverton against North Smithfield Mount St. Charles, the co-op team.
And if it's anything like last year, it's going to take 3 hours and you're going to see about 90 points.
Well, I'm going to be covering that one, Eric, so give me a little insight into what that one's going to be like.
There's going to be a lot of throwing and a lot of offense. Tiverton's not hiding their identity. They're not trying to. They're going to try to stop you, but their strength is their offense. Matt Kachuk is probably the best quarterback I've seen.
Yeah, he's good.
He's so talented. He gets lost in Division IV. He's got size. He's got the strongest arm I've seen. And you know, no offense to any of the other guys out there, but he can throw it. He knows when to run. And the development of Nate Upchurch as a running back now as a secondary option has really strengthened that offense. Last year, their biggest problem they had was they had guys who struggled to catch the ball. And this year, that hasn't really been much of a problem. It's with North Smithfield, Mount St. Charles, who I'm just, they're at North Smithfield as far as I'm concerned, because that's too many words to say. But
right, the North Mounties.
The North Mounties are, they're offensively great. I mean, it's from the quarterback, the running back, receivers, they know how to put up points. Last week, and that's why when I saw that score, I was taken aback. I was surprised they struggled so much against Ponegasset.
Yep, 24-21 win.
With a field goal with 13 seconds left. And by the way, Pasquale Camastro is the best kicker in the state. It's for a kid, you know, the kid's got guts. We've seen it. I've seen some videos of him kicking. He's fantastic. And it was good to see a kid like that come up big. Because rarely in Rhode Island do you see the game-winning field goal in the waning seconds of a game. So it's, yeah. If you were there last year, there was 2 300-yard games. Both quarterbacks threw for 300, which we don't see that in Rhode Island. So, to be honest, I expect more of the same this year.
Yeah, you know, you're tempted maybe to look at Tiverton and say, are they going to do what Ponegasset did? Are they going to pound it on the ground? Can they take the air out of the ball? Can they keep it away from Jack Puccetti and his receivers and his running backs? And you know, because I don't necessarily think that Tiverton can go out there, line up, and outscore this co-op team. I don't necessarily think that they're going to be able to win a game if North Smithfield Mount St. Charles has 35-40 points. I'm not totally convinced of that.
The one thing North Smithfield
it would be risky to do.
Michael Pive is one of the better linebackers you're going to see. I believe he's a junior now, and he's fantastic. He's going to be controlling that defense for North Smithfield, and if he can do it and keep those gains small, as long as they're not giving up big plays, North Smithfield should win this game. Is that going to happen? I don't know. Last year, it looked like they were going to be good, and then it all fell apart. And my niece, I don't know if you guys can hear it, but my niece right now is kind of falling apart on us.
That's our co-star, Delaney. She's been great so far through the first 27 minutes. We think we can get her through a couple more. I'm also going to take North Smithfield Mount St. Charles, which would be their first football championship. North Smithfield's first year in the Interscholastic League was 1968. This is only going to be their second Super Bowl appearance all time. They just happen to come back to back, and I think, you know, much like Pilgrim, they're going to carry over that experience into this year and be able to get it done. Now, obviously, Eric, there's already been one Super Bowl played. That was the state championship Super Bowl game. That's what they call it, right?
I think so, yeah. That's what we're going with.
Whatever the name is. That was Hendricken and Portsmouth. The two division winners, Hendricken, the champions again, 35-8 over the Patriots. A result that really surprises nobody. Hendricken is an absolute machine at this point.
It was fun for about two plays when Portsmouth came out, tried the onside, you know, the old surprise onside kick, and they got
a little swinging gate in there, right?
They got flagged on the on the onside kick attempt for false start. They retried it, didn't get it. Hendrick comes out, first play of the game, fumbles, and it's like, this is how these stories are written. And then it was all downhill from there. Three and out later, you know, 52-yard touchdown run by Angel Sanchez, and Hendrick came in and did what Hendrick does. And I know people don't like to hear it, but the programs run well. The players play hard. They want to win. They want to play. And they do it the right way. And those kids really showed up, and they executed. They didn't make many mistakes. They don't... They work for it, and it's, you know, you hear a lot of stuff. I hear a lot of stuff on Twitter about, oh, it's not fair, but you can't discredit what those kids are doing, because it's remarkable to see the consistency and excellence they've had for the last 10 years, because at some point they were going to slip.
Right. They've lost one Super Bowl since 2010. That was in 2017 when LaSalle got them. You know, I just look at Hendrickson and I see them as, and we'll get into the fact that, you know, they're a private school and they can draw from everywhere. But I just look at them and I see Keith Croft, not only as a great coach, but as the perfect CEO for that program. A guy who has hired a great staff, who puts his players into college programs, you know, who's so calm, so efficient on the sidelines. You think back to Alabama before Nick Saban. In the 4 years under Mike Shula, Alabama was 26-23. Very, very average. They had a 10-win season in there that was forfeited because they used a couple ineligible players. But otherwise, you're looking at 4-9, 6-6, 10-2, 6-6. That's unthinkable for Alabama in 2019, considering their machinery. You know, the players they're able to bring in and develop and the facilities that they have and what they have to sell. Hendrickson is sort of at that perfect point right now where, yes, they have some advantages, but they're also making the most of those advantages with Croft at the helm, with some of the guys that he's put into college, with some of the exposure that they've gotten. And they and LaSalle have been able to widen the gap on the public schools over the last 10 to 15 years for a variety of factors that would be its own separate podcast at this point.
Yeah, and it's, again, like I said, the thing that I appreciate most about Keith Croft is that, you know, he's out there to make his players not only better players, but better men growing up. And but he doesn't want what's best just for his program. He wants what's best for the state, for everyone. And he's, you know, he likes to see all these other teams win and all these other teams succeed. And he's the first one to step up and say, hey, all these other coaches are doing a good job. And it's true. There's a lot of great programs out there. I just think with what Hendrickson's doing right now, some of these other programs need to take a look at, well, what's North Kingstown doing? Why are they having so much success right now? And start developing that way, because, you know, maybe you don't get 10, 12 years of continued winning in Division I, you know, type talent. But you can have a program that lasts if the work gets in. And Joe Gilmartin showed us it's not an overnight thing. It's not 1 or 2 years you get it done. It takes 5 or 6 years to really build a program. And, you know, Croft has his program right now. And it's how someone's going to stop it. Someone else is going to have to step up and get their program to where his is at right now.
Right. You know, and there were games that they could have lost over the last couple of years. They could have easily lost to Hendrickson at the start of this season. Lost to North Kingstown at the start of this season. You know, I know you and I would both like to see the playoff format be different and have at least a plus one model, semifinal, final. I'd love to see North Kingstown get another shot at Hendrickson in a Super Bowl game. But, you know, to Hendrickson's credit, they could point and say, well, we played them already. We beat them. They had their chance. Granted, very early in the season, but you know, they could have changed this by beating us. You know, and that's certainly an argument that you can make.
And, you know, and speaking of all these great programs, we don't talk about Portsmouth, who Dustin Almeida to come in. It's, if we don't have a coach of the year at the Projo, but if we did, he would be the coach of the year.
Yeah.
Because for him to take over a program that's had consistently been good, you know, and to put it where they did this year, it's enormous. They were number three, and they were supposed to be number three, maybe number four in that division. And to get to a Super Bowl is a big deal. And I know the community appreciates what happened this season.
You know, obviously you have a coaching change there. You have a terrible off-field tragedy there. You know, shook the team and the community and you know, the great Portsmouth fans to their core. And you know, it's certainly something that you talk about kids trying to bounce back from adversity. And normally we talk about that, you know, in the framework of a game or a play or something else. Those kids dealt with something that was real life, you know, over the last year. And to see them perform the way that they did and come together the way that they did this season, you know, really inspiring run by Portsmouth. The fact that they were able to play for a championship for the third time in 4 years here, being in a Super Bowl. They were the Division I champions in 2016. They lost that game in 2017. To bounce right back and be in a Super Bowl again this season after a, you know, a really tough 2018 on and off the field, that's a credit to the players, to Coach Almeida, and to that town, really.
Yeah, and it's, you know, regardless of what happened, you know, they were the underdogs. They didn't back down from that fight. They showed up. They played. They played hard. They were outgunned there. And for those who didn't see it, it was, you know, Portsmouth tried to, they pulled out every trick in the book they could, and nothing was working. And it's, Hendrickson's, the key I thought in that game was on Hendrickson's defensive line. With Jason Onye, he's, if you don't know who he is, you're going to, because he's getting Division I college offers everywhere right now.
You're
going to
watch him on Saturday at some point.
He's 6'3", 6'4". He's as fast as any running back in the state. He's strong, and when you have a defensive lineman who owns the line, doesn't let you go outside, he maintains the pocket, it's really hard to design an offense that's going to fight that. And the kid was fantastic. And then, you know, Hendrickson's strength, everyone thinks they have all these all-stars. It's their skill guys are great, don't get me wrong, but their line is fantastic. Just they work as a unit. Right. Jake Picard was a monster in the game. And, you know, you get those linemen working hard up front, creating these holes and just beating down defensive lines. It takes its toll, and it allows for those big plays that we saw from Camella, from Angel Sanchez, from James, who I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name, but the running back who ripped off the 50-yarder to close the game.
Yeah, James Gobewall. You know, and that's the sort of thing, that's the sort of attention to detail and the depth that Hendrickson is able to put out just about every single year. You watch the little things like that, whether it's in the kicking game or, you know, the fact that they don't take many penalties or the fact that they're solid up front. Just about every year on both sides of the ball, that's just winning football, and it has been, you know, pretty much as long as the game has been played.
And I guess the good news for next year, for at least what most people want to see, is that, you know, from, it seems like this postseason, this playoff format that we have now is going to be changed next year. So we're going to go back to the true, you know, hopefully this maybe 18 Division One, maybe just 4-4 and go back to the way it was, because it would have been fun to have seen a North Kingstown Hendrickson Super Bowl this year. And, you know, in my dream of dreams, maybe someone calls Terry Lynch down at South Kingstown and says, hey, maybe NK's not going to play you guys this year. And let's see Hendrickson and NK go. But, you know, that's only in dreams. But it will. It would have been fun this year, but hopefully it'll be a fun one next year.
I would not be making that call to Terry Lynch. I would not be giving up that game, nor would I ask him to do so. But, you know, bottom line, folks, we got four great games this weekend, noon and 4 o'clock on Saturday and Sunday at Cranston Stadium. Get out there, support the kids, support your local communities. Eric will be there on Saturday. I will be there on Sunday. You can follow Eric on Twitter, at Eric Rube, R-U-E-B. You can follow me, Bill Koch, at Bill Koch 25. Follow us along, obviously, at projo.com, providencejournal.com as well. Eric, this was a lot of fun. Enjoy the games, and we'll do it again.
All right, I'm excited for him. Can't wait.
This podcast is a production of the Providence Journal, online at providencejournal.com.